The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now and live on video, of course, he's so jolly. He is the Father Christmas of finance. He is the Santa of stocks. It's on. Is the rally here for you, Paul? Is the rally happening amongst your stocks at the moment?
The valley? What's the rally?
The Santa rally.
Oh, the rally. Oh, okay. Yeah. The Santa rally. No, unfortunately not. No, it's been going the other way. So I've had a bit of a bath over the last about a couple of weeks whilst you've been away. And in fact, I see you've brought your Dominican Republic beach shirt on for Christmas celebration. Oh, yeah. So yeah, I don't know whether you're going to go out and lie in the snow later on or whatever. But it seems very appropriate attire.
It's Christmas time. I thought there's a bit of, it's some Christmassy, flowery, shirty thing, but it's also sort of Caribbean feel to it. And, but I guess
you'll
so bored.
You'll get arrested if you get out of the pub wearing that.
I don't think we're allowed. Are we going to go to the pub? What's the rules now? I have no idea. I know in Wales, it's like you can go to the pub, apparently, with six people, but you can't go to work. So, odd thing, just skip the work, go for the post-works drink, and you're fine. But if you go to work, you get a fine. It makes no sense. And I did post on Twitter, I said, why does Nicola Sturgeon and Mark Drakeford, I just think they do it for their own sort of personalities, their own gain, because people recognise them more. They release these restrictive policies that have shown, they've had no positive effect on reducing the virus spread compared to England. All they've done is damage businesses, livelihoods, increase mental health issues, and they're doing it again. And now we've got data from Omicron. And I did say about a week back, I said, people are going to discover, I mean, you know, early data coming out from South Africa and everywhere else saying it's more mild, you know, as a variant. If you have the third jab, literally, if you do go to hospital, you spend less time in hospital, but the very few people, in fact, I've been keeping a spreadsheet on this, and the Delta variant pretty much. So cases to hospitalizations were around about 1.5%, a little bit higher. Omicron, the data we've got coming out on that, is less than 0.4%. So it's more than a third less. And even that, what people are not understanding as well, if you go into hospital, you spend less time as well there, apparently. So yes. I think Johnson is right to back off. And of course, he's got backbench sort of pressure on him as well, not to bring in restrictions. But I think we should wait and see here a bit, because this is the reason I'm quite bullish about 2022 as well. I think by January, the fear will be gone about this. By when the fear is high, we were in the middle of that, or it came out at the end of that. And in January, I think, you know, we are now going to have a cracking 2022, because it's even had a positive impact on inflation a little bit, hasn't it? So this, you know, it's ready to go. I think 2022 is set up for a good rally, I think, you know.
Yeah, I think just on that Omicron, I think what you're seeing is, say, the less severe symptoms, and that's looking at the science, it does appear as though the actual variant stays more in the nose and the nasal system rather than actually dropping deeper into the lung area. And that's the reason why there's less hospitalizations, because if it stays around your sort of like your head and your nose, then yes, it becomes more contagious, but you don't get that sort of like, you know, the complaint, which was the start, where you have cement in your lungs and you can't breathe. And if it doesn't get down there, then you don't get as many breathing problems and you don't get clotting either. And I think that's why we're not seeing as many people go into to hospital now.
I see you and ventilator beds, of course, because like you say, if you're staying up here, not going down here, you don't get people on ventilators and going to ICU, which is the key thing. If you're tying up ICU, it's very dangerous, of course. So, that's encouraging.
And that's the reason why you're seeing recovery periods much quicker than you are previously from the Delta, because the depth of the virus is a lot closer to your head rather than actually to into your lungs where you can cause damage. Now, I'm with you. I actually think we're going to get good news in terms of level of, you know, the hospitalizations in January, and that's going to sort of clear it. But the only last piece in the jigsaw is how much impact it's going to have on the actual workforce, how many people are actually going to be infected, and whether that means we're going to see a significant increase in absentees, particularly for emergency services like the NHS, or alternatively delivery drivers and all this sort of stuff. Now, I'm hoping that if we do reach a verdict such that, yes, it's less severe, then actually, you know, we'll say well, people who actually get infected haven't got a quarantine for 10 days. They've only got a quarantine for about 5 days or 4 days or 3 days even, and just until they get a negative lateral flow test. And if that's the case, then that should, then we should be able to part that issue as well. But that's going to be a bit of an impact, obviously, because there's very few trains running at the moment. And I think almost 20% of the NHS staff in Wales are already off with Omicron or with COVID. So that's, those are the two issues to watch. So I'm with you. I think hospitalizations, the NHS, with a bit of luck, following wind, should be able to cope. And then it's really going to be how many people are off work and what that means in terms of, you know, workforces with companies where they've got sufficient staff to be able to actually man the ship.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that, the discussion on Twitter between Fraser Nelson from The Spectator magazine and one of the guys who advised the government. And of course, he admitted, the guy from the government advisor, scientist, said, we don't give, you know, reasonable or good-looking outlooks. That's not our job. Our job is the worst-case scenarios where you have to make a decision, you know? Mm. And you can understand that point of view, but what happens is the media latch on then to that worst-case scenario and people think it's the norm, and it's not. I mean, if you look at the stats at the moment, I think on Omicron alone, we're up at about 70,000 cases on Omicron, and they were saying it should be way above sort of 200,000 by now. So it's under where we are, and of course, hospitals. So yeah, when that's the trouble with media. They're now still focusing on cases, but where they aren't translating into hospitalizations, you said, well, hang on a second, stop blowing this up out of all proportion. Like 100,000 entire cases, what, yesterday, said, oh, it's gone over 100,000. Yes, but they were suggesting that Omicron on its own could be over 200,000 by now, and it's not. So, so a bit of panicking, people settle down, look at the data. And but I always say to people, you know, if you look at good businesses, and it's what Buffett always does, isn't it? He buys when the fear is high. That is an opportunity in the market. If the entire market's selling off, it's not company specific, and it's not because your company's doing something wrong or they've changed their business strategy in some way or it's gone down the tubes, then that, if you have cash, is an opportunity to buy. That's when you get cheaper shares, and that's what you do better than the herd. The herd tend not to make money because they sell when there's panic. You should buy when there's panic and sell when everyone's exuberant, of course. So these kind of dips are opportunities, aren't they, really, you know?
Look at
Boohoo, and look at the ones you've been brought.
Well, before we move on to Boohoo, I've got plenty to talk about that, but let's just look, just before we move off Omicron, there was a company, obviously, which has done pretty well in terms of Omicron, or helping the nation out, and that's a factor because it talked about its lateral flow test about 2 weeks ago or a week ago, saying that actually that picks up Omicron in clinical trials, so that's great. Or in lab tests, etc. And then likewise, this week it said that it'd become the first UK company to have its rapid lateral flow test approval, CE marking, so it can be sold to consumers directly in the EU and in the UK. And that's brilliant because it means that you, I and the dog can then go and buy these tests where effectively, you know, it's very difficult to actually get, you know, tests, particularly in boroughs in London. It's difficult elsewhere in abroad as well to get these. And these are super accurate. This is a sort of like very high 90 specificity and sensitivity as well. So that's good for sort of actually tackling and identifying when people have Omicron and also being able to get off it as well. So that's a really good sort of like... feather in the cap of that of Avacta. That should help matters.
Do you know, just look at the chart on Avacta, and that £1 level is bouncing off that quite nicely. It's done it several times now, so you would suggest if you can get it close to that and you know the story, then that's a good level, it seems to be. It's a good support.
There was other good news in tackling Omicron and COVID in just general was Pfizer's antiviral. It got approved last night, they've got to basically ramp up production, but that will really help the world, and particularly say in the US in the early days, for those patients who are most at risk of going into hospital once they've caught it. If you can actually give them a 2 or 3 day treatment, etc., then that reduces the risk significantly by about 80-90%, I think it is. So it's really effective for that treatment. So I think the world has definitely moved on from COVID, and we are moving into this epidemic type of phase. And if we are, we would all love to think that the next variant coming down the track after Omicron will be, again, less severe and more flu-like than say, Delta or Alpha, which is what happened to Spanish flu. But anyway, we don't know, so we've just got to wait and see to a certain extent. And then countries such as China, which are obviously massively important in terms of driving the global growth, they need to come off their zero tolerance policy, because you saw this morning that they announced they were going to lock down 13 million people because they had a couple of cases of COVID.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically Delta. And you look at that and you just think, well, actually, that is crazy, because all it means is such that, you know, you reduce effect, you keep inflation around the world and you reduce sort of like availability of parts. So, you know, countries which have had a zero tolerance have probably got to come off that. Anyway, let's wait and see. But I'm with you. I think actually 2022 is likely to be positive. And now moving on, as you rightly say, to shares which have been absolutely hammered. Boohoo is really quite interesting, because before the announcement, I think the shares were £1.20. They'd come off. And then they had a trading update, which was negative, a profit warning. And then it drove the shares down to below a pound. And you rightly said, you know, once you should buy on fear and on weakness, because a really astute institutional investor then saw, my God, this is an opportunity here at less than a pound. Norge Bank, which is basically the sovereign wealth fund of Norway, picked up about 1% or 2% of the actual company. And the shares are almost back to where they were pre the profit warning, at about sort of like 115, 120 at the moment. But you know, have the wheels fallen off Boohoo? That's the big question. And is it long term? And the answer to that is yes, they've got a number of headwinds. Things like, for instance, higher freight costs they're incurring. Again, sort of transitional. They've got basically higher levels of returns. And I know you've got that flowery shirt from Boohoo, and you've probably returned.
Not saying this.
And you've probably returned the other two as well. So they've had higher returns where people have wanted to go out, but they're probably now, you know, they can't go out in those type of shirts, so they've returned them, you see. So they've had higher level of returns, but they've got to change their returns policy, and hopefully that will sort itself out. But the biggest impact they've had is that whereas pre-pandemic they were delivering direct into the US, into Europe from the UK in about 3 days. And that was, you know, underpinning their sort of marketing campaign. Now, because of effectively supply chain problems and lack of capacity on airlines, then that delivery time is extended now to 7-8 in Europe and 10 days, as high as 10 days in the States. And what it's meant, it's undermined the demand in those overseas regions. And so they've gone negative in terms of like-for-like growth overseas. But again, that will sort itself out by the end of 2022, 2023, when they can get their, you know, infrastructure in place and the warehouses and stuff like that. So yes, it's going to have a difficult next year. They're still going to be in transition. Margins are still going to be artificially depressed at around about 6-7% EBITDA margins. But I still think they'll make growth, because the UK is doing really well, and the underlying demand for the product is still very strong. It's just really they've got to sort themselves out in terms of the whole supply chain, and the headwinds which are being caused by obviously COVID will eventually subside. And if you believe that, then the shares at the current levels are still an absolute steal, because when you run the numbers, and they had the CEO, John Little, talking about where the business could be at sort of like £5 billion in sort of, well, probably 5 years, 3 years, whatever it is. The shares will be definitely worth more than £6 on that basis. So there's plenty of upside on a really big cap. But obviously, that baby got thrown out with the bathwater. And that's why, as you rightly pointed out, as Warren Buffett says, you know, buy when there's blood on the streets. And that's what Norge Bank did. And the shares will probably not trade greatly over the next year, but I'm as a long-term holder, I'm happy to just keep my position and have a good 2022.
Yeah, well, do you know what, that's it. I mean, they often say, you know, there's lots of cliches in investing, isn't it? And one of them is a profits warning, you know, they come in threes basically, and you can see why that happens, because essentially they sort of announce results, which aren't that good, then, of course, it takes a while. Things like, you know, supply chain issues takes a while to work its way out and all that stuff, and you have other knock-on effects to that. And you find it turnarounds and even, you know, take a lot longer than everyone thinks. So everyone tends to jump in on a share. They're, oh, it's jumping quick. But that's why sometimes I scale in, because, you know, I often, you know, it's very hard to get the bottom, or you think the bottom, even at the valuation perspective, you think this is very cheap now. But then all of a sudden, the guidance changes and it brings it down again. So, yeah, but you're right. All that fear, though, like you say, has the picture changed, as demand is going down, that is the fear you buy into. And it's hard to do that, isn't it? Because they will get back to where they were. We know that. And we'll be looking to
say, we hope,
you know,
anyway.
Well, no, is that worry, though, that uncertainty that is part of you getting a good price. That's how to get a bargain.
It is,
you know, that uncertainty is exactly. People will start saying there's lots of negatives, they'll never go back to where they were, and all that. That kind of negative spin and spiel is the reason why the share price is down here. Now, you've got to have a set of balls to actually take advantage of that. But some people say, oh, I'll stick away until there's good news. Once there's good news out, it's too late. It rallied, you know, that's it. So you take advantage of that discount, really, in the market.
There was a great example of that that principle. I interviewed Christopher Mills, who's just an awesome long-term small cap investor from Harwood Capital. And he talked about one instance that he invested in effectively waste landfill company, or what it's called, OGM, which has got taken out privately by one of the big merchant banks, one of their infrastructure funds just recently. Anyway, they had a tax issue in 2017 from HMRC, which sent the share price down to around about less than 25p, where he absolutely piled in. So this is like 4 to 5 years ago, okay? At the depths of, a bit like the sort of the March, you know, 2020, when they had the pandemic, and everybody's saying this company's going bust. Anyway, I think he sold out at £3.60 or something like that last month. And he said he's turned £8 million into about 50 odd. Was that 50? Was a £50 million profit on it. And that just shows you what you're talking about there as a principle. Two things. One, you buy on fear. And the other one, you actually got to hold on to these shares. If you're going to see some significant returns, you've got to be prepared to actually hold on to them for 4, 5, 6, even 10 years to get the really big returns in through thick and thin. When they go through sort of like, you know, sort of like there's a market sell-off or there's a bit of bad news, you've got to take that volatility and the drawdown. So, you're spot on. You're spot on. Even though your shirt is a bit sort of like difficult to handle this morning, particularly at Christmas, what you're saying, principle-wise, is sort of totally relevant.
Well, do you know what? Another example of this, and I said one of the best areas to be in at the moment, and it sounds odd, and I started buying, you know, like I said, escape hunt shares when it was lockdown. And I said, what are you doing that for? It's crazy. And it was 7p, you know, their price to go bust, like 4 million market cap. Yeah. And they had a bit of cash there, plus they had money, and the furlough came in and all that stuff, so they weren't burning any money. So, and they expanded their, you know, their physical estate. They doubled it, you know, during the lockdown. And so when they opened back up then, they have, of course, a lot more revenue. It's happening again, though, because it's gone to 50p, it's come back down to 30p because of fears of lockdown. So, listen, it's not going to be around for long. You know, in January, the fears of Omicron will be gone. And now, when you get the first signs of that coming out, it'll be too late. The share price will rally. You've got to buy into the fear, the worry that it's not going to, you know, it's going to last forever. And even though you get these consenting, you know, these voices, contrarian voices saying, no, we don't know the data yet on Omicron. That's the fear and uncertainty you buy into. Now, if you want a discount on the share price, you've got to buy into that uncertainty and fear, because as soon as good news comes out, the discount is gone. That's it. So that's the best advice. I think this is... I think now this is a very across the market entirely. I mean, most of AIM's in a bear market, you know. I think it'll last very long. I think 2022 will be an excellent year. I think this is the time to start buying in the fear right now, you know.
No. I mean, another example of that, which is in transition, and I talked about it 2 weeks ago, whether it's a falling knife or a fallen angel, I'm not sure, but it's Purple Bricks. And it was quite amusing, because, well, it wasn't amusing, it was quite painful, in fact. But I said to you 2 weeks ago that I'd bought some shares, a half position in Purple Bricks. And then on the Monday morning, they'd said they'd actually had a problem with their lettings business. Yeah. And as it's transpired, what it is essentially it's a total own goal, i.e. such that what the law says is that we're actually a tenant in a house. gives you a deposit, gives the landlord a deposit. It's then got to be, that deposit's got to be registered with one of the sort of like a ring fenced sort of you know, a current account held by the government, which is what they did. They basically passed all of those deposits into that ring, that government ring fenced account. What they haven't done is actually send a letter. All it was sending a letter to the tenant, telling them that actually that had actually occurred. And because of the sort of dogmatic or restrictive nature of the Housing Market Act, then it says that you can potentially get sort of, the tenant can claim compensation off you. Anyway, they've done the numbers. It could well cost them sort of £2 to £9 million, depending on how many claims they get. But there's no actual damage to the tenant. He hasn't lost anything. He was never at risk, but he just didn't receive a letter. So the way it's actually scripted, the Housing Act just puts them up into sort of like potential fines. So anyway, the shares were bombed out from about 30p down to about 23, 24 at the moment. Where actually I've added to my position. I've bought the other half position in Purple Bricks. What when that happened after the announcement? So I've sort of like followed that principle in terms of, you know, this has got so much negativity into the actual built into the stock. It hasn't got it. It's just got to get less bad for the stock price to do quite well. Whether it will or not is another kettle of fish, but I can actually see 2022 because of the things people remember. It's basically an online digital estate agent, which has got about 4.5-5% of the UK market wanting to track to 10%. But you had Rightmove last week, which is obviously the granddaddy in the industry. It doesn't directly compete against Purple Bricks, but it said that it's seen a 19% increase on valuations requests by its users on its website of its houses. And that's usually a very good sign that a lot more people are going to be selling their property in 2022, which has been the main reason why you've had profit warnings this year from Purple Bricks, because there there's been strong housing demand, but not enough sellers on the market. So they've got a tailwind there in terms of more instructions. And if we are sort of like, you know, more hesitant about going to people's houses in the near term in the spring buying season, then again, being a digital sort of like first business, Purple Bricks should do quite well, because obviously all the viewings can be done online and they sell pretty well on that one. So, but it's in transition. It's got a lot of problems. But as I say, my thesis on it is the shares are absolutely dirt cheap at the moment. They've got over 50. Even if you put the fine in, they've got about 50 million of cash, or maybe slightly less, but that type of number at the moment, which is probably around about, I can't remember exactly how much it is. But
58 million, they said there?
It was 58, but if you take take 9 off, you get about 49. And I can't remember how many shares they've got, but it's about sort of 15p in cash net, and the shares are 20 to 24. So that sort of values, you know, sort of like the brand at roughly around about 30 mil or something like that. So, you know, you look at that and you just think, well, okay, they've got a 5% of the market share, well-distinguished brand. There hasn't got to be that much going right for this business, for the stock to do well. But it's gone. If you look at the actual chart, there's a lot of people who are very negative on it and they think it's going bust. But, well, anyway, it's a high-risk play and we'll wait and see.
But do you know what? It's funny. You look at GARP stocks, you know, growth at a reasonable price. You could argue it's a reasonable price now. But the growth thing, it needs to come on, doesn't it? Because they say they're confident of 20% revenue growth year on year. Why are they confident of that then? Any reason why? I mean, because
It's simply because they've had, you know, the instructions essentially. Okay. You know, everybody like on the market and Rightmove and all they've all been saying the same thing. There's just as not many sellers out there. If you try and buy a house, there's like 10 buyers to one seller. But that will resolve itself, you know, over the next 12 months. Here it is. They've got how many shares they've got out?
300 million, is it? 300 million.
They've got 310 million. So if you had 49 million of cash divided by 310 million shares. Okay, well, that's not a bad guess, 15.8p. Mm. So they've got that. I mean, when you look at it from that lens, you know, the whole market cap is only worth 74 million? I mean, that is just dirt cheap, isn't it? So you're talking 25 million for a pretty big brand. Anyway, I don't know. We'll wait and see. But that was my logic in terms of the shares are absolutely battered. And there's just got to be less bad news coming through. If you ever get that growth you're talking about, 20% per annum, these will fly. The shares will really perform strongly. But let's be clear about it. Yeah, they're baked into almost like going bust at the moment. And I just can't see it.
I knew you were looking at a sort of property thing, and you were getting very interested about on the market. I thought you were going to buy on the market. But then I think, isn't this like your daughter's boyfriend sort of... give you the heads
up.
That was
Purple Bricks. But when you talk about on the market, actually, again, I'd point investors, have a listen to what Christopher Mills of Harwood Capital said. He is absolutely really on board with that company. And I mean, he told me, and it's, you know, it's a public anyway, that he hasn't, like, you know, on the tape, etc., that he's buying at the moment. And he's just struggling to get enough shares. So that will not fall below a pound, I'm sure, not significantly anyway, because he'll be just buying up. He's fun. He thinks this could that business could do, or the share price could do really, really well over the next, how many years. So, I think he's nailed his flag to the mast on the market.com.
Yeah, you know, I like them a lot. They've got the growth. They're going in the right direction. Jason's doing the good job. And, of course, Clive behind him there, he started the turnaround. Then Jason's added to it now with technology sort of buying as well. And I liked it. The only thing you said, that Chris Mills can't buy stock, that's true. It's very liquid. And the problem is, as you know, they issue equity to stay just new clients that come on board. And sometimes you get the older ones just drip feeding that into the market. So you've got the issue of equity, and maybe you've got some estate agents selling. So what you get is that the share price doesn't make any gain. Obviously the limited amount of equity they've got there, but once they stop issuing equity, I think it'll fly. But I think if anything, that drip feed sometimes just holds the share price back a little bit, you know?
It may hold it back, but it ain't going any lower because Christopher's going to be buying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's buying what? Yeah, he's buying all the drip feeders. That's good. He's just soaking them up.
When you look at it on that risk-reward perspective, you shouldn't lose anything very much at all in the short term or the next year or so. And all you've got is potential upside. So
You talked to Jason on the video a while back, and the valuations can be a right move. I know right move is a dominant player. But it's sales multiple and that stuff. It's way undervalued, isn't it, compared to that? So interesting. Yeah, yeah. Anything else happening?
Yeah, another one was basically in the healthcare space, and I've said this many a time. When you come to actually select businesses with sort of in that space where there's a lot of it's an R&D heavy type of industry, always go best in class with the actual science, with the technology. And on that principle, I'd point people to sort of have a good look at Oncommune. The actual shares have fallen off, but their Immuno Insights service is really doing well. It's sort of buoyant Q2 level of orders, and that's continued into Q3. And the CEO, Adam Hill, he announced some orders last week. And, basically, he's got a deluge of them at the moment. And they are really at sort of the leading edge of medical science. And, that is the sort of the key differentiator when you come to select. And then you sort of like ask, the orders they've got was a large pharma with, sort of like master service agreements and collaboration agreements with sort of institutions and stuff like that. But then you've got to ask, is the momentum sustainable? And why is it happening now? And the two reasons why it's happening now is that actually, the pandemic has just really accelerated that whole sort of like innovation cycle within healthcare and big pharma. That's released a lot of the sort of the drugs and the new sciences. And because these guys are at the leading edge, they see that first, and they're really now starting. So they've got a big tailwind really from this golden age of healthcare. When it comes to, is it sustainable? Yeah, I can see this because their database, or that Immuno Insight database, the more samples it does, then the deeper and better the actual information they get out of it as well. So they're increasing their barriers to entry. And the other thing they did as well, you know, was basically they raised about £9 million back, I think it was in March of earlier this year. And that's allowed them to increase their capacity. So they've got increasing demand with increasing supply. And that's the perfect mix. And these, you know, when they do a sample or a test for one of these big farmers, etc., you know, for their R&D sort of like projects and stuff, then the EBIT, well, effectively the gross margins are over 80%. So there's huge drop through onto the profitability. And you could really see this be at a pivotal year for Onkymoon. They're going to be 12 million turnover with sort of 2 million plus on the EBITDA. And that'll be their first year of profitability. And then from then, it's really sort of like, you know, plenty of cash and plenty of profits coming down because the drop-through rates are just fabulous. So again, I would say, you know, this is a bit of a baby in the bathwater. The shares are trading at about 160, 170. And it's right on my sort of radar to sort of like some, to potentially to pick some up because I've been looking to increase my weighting of healthcare. And you've got to look at it and you think, okay, 116 million, you know, market cap. You know, this one could, the shares could do really, really well in the long term on that immune, just on the Immuno Insight. So they're doing really, really well, even though the shares have performed badly.
Yeah. No, well, that's it. Shares do that. That's the opportunity sometimes, you know. I mean, and I think the well-researched people understand that. I mean, the traders don't. The traders sort of, the share price drops, they sell. You know, you only sell some, you only lose money if you actually sell when the share price has dipped. You know, if the business is intact long term, you're going to make money, you know, and I just see lots of opportunities at the moment. There's lots of shares out there that
exactly. You know, Well, I mean, that was also one of the reasons why, you know, I actually this last week or so I sold Sage, which is sort of like you know, it hit my price sort of like, you know, I said it was, I thought it was worth around about sort of like five times the, you know, sales, et cetera, hit that sort of like, you know, 820, 830, et cetera. So I just basically, you know, took some profits off the table. So I've got plenty of cash to be able to deploy, which is what I'm going to do. My cash holding now is about 19% of sort of like, you know, stocks. So yeah, it's quite high, which is great news because it gives me plenty of things to deploy. And that's exactly why, because there's so much opportunity out there. And again, another one I'd point people to, which has come off, you know, is in the healthcare space, is Trellis. And you know, I suffer from Crohn's disease. In fact, my brother does as well. Well, these guys are right in there with sort of, they've got their, it's an IBD resilience AI science driven sort of healthcare platform that helps patients manage their, you know, effectively Crohn's and colitis and other IBD conditions. Anyway, they came out with a update last week, and I interviewed the CEO Monique Fayyad, who, I mean, the long term trajectory of this business is still really, really positive. But they're just saying that some of their contracts they were hoping to sign, they're going to be pushed to the right a couple of months because it's a quite complex sale to insurance payers and to corporates out in the States, etc. But they're seeing a lot of interest. The early signs, the early people who have had the tests are doing, you know, are loving it, and the users are loving it as well, who are actually trialing it. And what it also means, there's a silver lining, because they've got more sort of like, you know, capacity, they can now bring forward their direct-to-consumer model, so people like me will be able to use it. If they started selling in the UK, that would be the case anyway.
It's back to IPO price nearly, isn't it? I'm looking at the chart here. IPO went from, opened at 43, it got up to like 75 pence next few sessions. Now it's back down to 44. So it's IPO. That's another thing. Before I used to, you know, get excited and jump in on IPOs if I was involved in the open market. And often you realise there's always more opportunity down the road. Let it settle for a bit. Let some news come out and have a bit of patience. And you often get the chance to pick up stock, you know, at the IPO price. You just have to wait a little bit, you know, if you like the company.
And Christopher Mills talked very positively about, you know, Trellis when I spoke to him. And the other one he talked positively, which hasn't come out with any news, but has been ahead of its plan, is Verici, you know, with CEO Sarah Barrington. And they do sort of like, you know, diagnostic tests for kidney transplant patients and stuff. They've got the sort of full end-to-end service of suites. But this will be a again, another like Trellis will be a, 2022 will be a pivotal year, and they've and the shares have only been sold off largely because US investors don't like biotech shares at the moment, and so you've had that sort of like everything in that sector has been hit wrongly, baby in the bathwater sort of stuff. But they're coming out with some pivotal validation test results, I think, in about sort of 3 to 4 months' time. And they'll hopefully have first revenues towards the back end of 2022. But again, the shares have come off, and you look at it and you think, well, okay, there's outstanding value there, as long as you've got a reasonably long time horizon. And he said, yeah, both Trellis and Verici, where he owns quite a big position, he's still very positive, and he thinks they're, you know, good healthcare businesses for you know, obviously for small cap risk tolerant investors. But if you've got a reasonably long time horizon, these could be sort of 4, 5, 6 times your money, you know, over that time period. But anyway, I'll just point those the principles we talked about and the opportunities. There's some good sort of healthcare stocks in Oncommune, Trellis, and with Verici.
You know, do you know what? I mean, today I'm seeing all my stocks in the green, which is quite nice because that hasn't happened for a long time.
You're the only one.
I know, but you know what? In fact, today's Gfinity is one of the stocks that's up the highest because it's just up over 6%. But and these have a massive sell-off since they announced their full year results, which I don't understand because people who don't know the story, John Clark, the CEO, took over this company. And it was basically an esports service provider, very small margin, big cash burn. He came in and said, right, we're going to be a digital media company, but centered around esports gaming because it's a growing area. So a very hot area. And slowly they pivoted from the service business, which no margin, to this higher business. It won't happen overnight. And their model is Future PLC, which has done phenomenally well, you know. And in fact, they share NED with Future PLC. But it's happening.
If they're like Future PLC, because that's Zilla, I can't remember, Zilla Bing, somebody, the CEO, she's just like done a fabulous job at Future. Yeah.
Well, if you look at that, when you go, I punched it out on Twitter today. I said, listen, they're doing exactly the same thing as, you know, as acquiring and improving their own websites they're optimizing them, getting the users up, the amount of users and the value per user up. And they just extended a deal with Venatus, who's a global sort of advertising technology platform, which helps them do this. And if you look at the figures, they've gone from when John took over, their gross margins when he took over was 13%, 1.3. Mm. Now they're at 50%. They're going to be over 60%. The first time that year-on-year revenues has grown since they've sort of pivoted towards this model. And the compound annual growth forecast is like 40% over the next 3 to 5 years. So it's going in the right direction. But because they had a loss of 2.7 million, which is halved, by the way, it's halved twice now. John has halved it twice. And they'll be profitable in 2023. And their year starts, by the way, after June this year. So they're in 2022 now. I don't know why it came off, and it went from like 5 pence to 3.5 pence. I thought, that's an opportunity. This company's just improving and improving. They don't need cash. They're going to be profitable. And so it's one of those things where, you know, the market just took it. I mean, I think they released news at the wrong time when the market's in a dreadful space as it was. People just saw a loss. But I thought, hang on, compare the loss to last year. It's coming down by 50% year on year. And now they're growing, you know. So it's just one of those things. It takes a while. If you look at Future PLC's chart from 2015 to 2016, it went up from 90 pence to 150. This is when they announced the strategy to go do digital media. And then came back down to 108. And I thought, how many people would have held through that period, know what the company are doing, know it's going in the right direction, but the share price isn't reflecting that? Then, from 2016, it went from 108 to 36 quid. That's 3,000% return. So you've got to hold on. I mean, if the business is improving, but the share price isn't reflecting it, the business is still improving, you've got to hold on, have a bit of faith, you know? Otherwise, you just trade it and you miss out on those massive long-term gains. So I'm sticking in there. I've held them for years now. I bought them sort of 1 pence. They hit 6 pence recently, but I haven't sold any. So I'm sticking with the volatility because I can see what's happening there. They're getting better. It's improving. It's growing. And I like them. So it's and it's very hot. You know, gaming and esports, it's not going away. You know, it's getting hotter all the time. So I like that. That's one, hopefully.
One for 2022.
Definitely. Well, all of my stocks are for 2022 and beyond. And nobody can escape it. XP Factory. It's starting to be worried. Say, oh, you know, because of course they will take hit on the bookings. Yeah, but Sunak's come out with, and it's not a lot, but 6 grand per premises in grant funds, but they've got like close to 40 sites now. So that the money they'll receive for that is equivalent to a year's worth of profit on an escape room. So I don't think the bottom line will take a big hit anyway. Plus they've got this statutory sick pay redemption, sort of they get that back. So it's only a month, pretty much, and what months of reduced bookings, they'll be back to normal. So the dip is worth taking advantage of, I think. And so that's good. Did you look into GetTech or GTech? Is called GTC is ticker.
I haven't had time. But that's one of the reasons I was going to say. That's one of the reasons why I quite like Christmas. It sort of gives you a bit of time to sort of relax with a family and watch a few films, but also sort of do some research on companies. You've just been so busy with your head down, sort of doing stuff, that you haven't really had a chance to spread your wings. But that'll be that'll be one. But have you got a full position in that now?
Not completely, but because I think there's the two funds, I think, maybe selling a bit. There's, every now and again, the share price rises, they tend to sell a bit. So, but I don't know if you look at it. Like I said, if you set up a Google Alerts for green hydrogen, every day there's big news out. Today, I just punched out the US Department of Energy on Tuesday launched the Office for Clean Energy Demonstrations with $21 billion in federal funding. The biggest single slice of this goes to green hydrogen. And that's the thing. Green hydrogen at the moment is capturing all this kind of clean energy news, it's very hot. And this is why, like, when I do it, like, try and invest in GARP stocks, but in hot areas, And GTEC is like this. They've announced their second project, Green Hydrogen Hub. And of course, they've got another business as well, but they are, it's a data led technology business, using software. They help companies and countries develop assets using their software. And they're doing about $4 million in revenue, $2.2 million that is recurring. But these green energy hubs, they're helping sort of design, the engineering side of it and the procurement and all that stuff. And they get a slice of that, the operating of the project by 20% for hardly any capital. Well, so far, I don't think there's been any capital expense on their side. And their brokers said they're going to generate per project around about $4.7 million in revenue, $1.8 million in EBITDA. So they're on the second one already now. The one in Inverness recently, one in Shoreham. So even based on that, they're looking at a times 10 multiple of EBITDA there. You're talking about over 100% upside from here. Of course, the revenue's not going to come in till a year after next, but it's there. They are building these projects. And they've got, this is with SGN Gas, which is a gas network provider. And they've got 21 in the review list with this company. And they're going, of course, to Europe as well. And I just think it's such a hot space. So if they get to even 20, it's like, it's ridiculous to talk about it, because it could be 2,000-3,000% gain if those kind of figures play out at that level. So it's just very exciting. I think because it's not really capital intensive to them, I think it's just very exciting, So it's worth looking at, definitely. But it's early stage, It's going to be a while till they get...
Another one worth looking at, well, we've talked about, we came out with interims, actually, last week. It was Saeta, which is basically in that whole EV hot space, etc. And they're absolutely on track to commercialise their axial flux electric motors. And their shares have doubled since their IPO price, but they've still got a huge sort of tailwind because... that technology is absolutely at leading edge in terms of what it can do. And if you just assume sort of like they take a sort of 5%, market of what the, just the two or three wheeler sort of like EV space is likely to get to in the next 10 years. If you assume that, then the shares go well above, sort of £10 from £2 now. So, you look at it, huge opportunity. Plus, that isn't the only sort of like, opportunity, chance they have, because they've got, lots of shots on goal, like the outboard motors, like sort of like, delivery vehicles, for like the Rivian ones they're doing for, it's basically... Amazon type sort of delivery vehicles, but it's with a UK company, not Amazon or Rivian, but with another company, common EAV, I think it's called. And also they've got, they bought that business out of almost receivership from Evergrande, E-Traction, just recently. So they've got their whole IPO stack is across the whole patch now of electric vehicles, where they've got this huge sort of like competitive advantage, particularly in two or three wheelers, where really none of their other axial flux, there's only a handful of axial flux you know, sort of like motor providers, and they can't get down to the same, the cost dynamics that you actually need for to put into sort of like to retrofit motorbikes or do new electric motorbikes. So they could be the only game in town where they've already set up their joint venture in India. Anyway, I'm hoping to speak to their CEO after Christmas, so it'd be interesting to hear what he says. But they are really, that's a really interesting bit of technology that some heavyweight investors have you know, really supported, the likes of you know, Andy Brough and Gervais Williams and Paul Jordan and the guys at Canaccord as well, Hargreaves Bale. So these are really smart people that have put significant money into. So again, the direction of travel for that one is probably very much up, because he's leading science. And in the interims, the CEO, Vic Kiss, said, you know, they're really busy, and you know, we'll wait and see what he says afterwards. But I suspect the demand, you know, as soon as they can get this product into customers' hands in significant volumes, then people are going to basically want it very quickly.
Yeah. And oh, it's hard to mention, actually, another one of my stocks I held. I talked to James, the CEO of Truefin, on the podcast. Oh, yeah. And they were supposed to announce the finalisation of the commercial deal with Lloyds and their Satago. There are four parts of the business, of course. The Satago is the fintech side, where it's finance loans and all that stuff, invoice financing with Lloyds. And it's been delayed again, but not delayed, but extended again.
It was to the right, wasn't it? It was extended.
Extended.
It was extended, but also expanded, which was
Yeah, exactly. And to me, that was quite positive. But of course, markets hate delays. So this has happened. But they also said that not only that, they are in talks with other, you know, and he said on the podcast, I can't say who they are, but in advanced talks with other very significant players who are household names regarding Satago. And so, you know, it's very positive. Everything's very positive. But of course, the market hates delays, so it took a bit of a dip. But he came on the podcast, explained about it, and the share price went back up. And I think 2022 is going to be a good year for them as well, because I was looking at the broker there. He was odd. James has always been confident the deal with the Lloyds will get done. He didn't know when it would get done. He said, it's a big company. They have a lot of stuff to do, a lot of people to talk to. But he sounds now more confident than ever it'll get done very early 2022. So I don't know, you know, why he's so confident, but he didn't seem as confident it would get done in 2021. But now he's very confident it'll happen in early. But he says lots of other things going on as well. And I got a broken note from this, and they say he did like 13.3 million the group in sales this year. They estimate that next year's gonna be 20 million, year after at 35 million. That's not including other significant deals that they're talking about. So it could be a lot bigger than that. So I like that. It's a very growth, you know, excellent growth area. And they've got other parts of the business all improving. They started with a company. Four of these companies were loss-making. Now two are making a profit. And the other two will hopefully go into profit over the next 2 years or so. So, yeah, I'm quite liking it. And to me, that's diversified there, because it's like four investment companies. You know, it's four companies in one.
Yeah.
So I quite like that. So, yeah, hopefully. I'm genuinely... People say, oh, do you still think there's going to be a Christmas rally, or are you still bullish because it's been very bearish the last 2-3 months? I think that's even more reason to be, you know, bullish, because if you look at the markets, you know, after a bad year, which the UK microcaps and small caps have had, generally the next year after tends to be very, very good, you know. So I think it's a
really good thing. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, I was actually looking at my returns and stuff like that, and when you look at it from an annualized perspective, I've actually, you know, as I said to you, I've actually had quite a good 2021, because I was in sort of like, you know, value and GARP stocks from last year, which got battered. So mine are over, like, you know, about a third up compared to where at the start of the year. So I've had a pretty overall, it's obviously been quite a difficult one over the last few months have been hit. But when you look at it on a 2-year lens and you put in the loss that I had last year, you still get it up to, like, you know, it's about nearly, just under 12% per annualized gain. So it's, let's say, 24% up from pre-pandemic levels, but essentially, you know, 11% per annum over the last 2 years during a pandemic. And then, you know, you look at it over a 3-year lens and it's 14%. So I'm with you in terms of, now, there's a number of really interesting stocks out there that you can, a lot of them, that you can really do some research. And I'll be doing a few over Christmas and New Year, that I want to redeploy some cash, you know. And I said, I've got 19% cash, which I'm frankly delighted about, because what that means is they've got plenty of firepower to you know, pick up opportunities going forward. Whether I pick up the right ones, I don't know. But
yeah,
we'll wait and
well,
see.
Well, I'll give you five if you want. There's, you know, like I said, there's Biome Technologies, there's XP Factory, there's GTEC, there's Truefin, there's Gfinity, of course. But yeah, I like all those. But yeah, playing them. No, do you know what? That's true what you say there, because I looked at, I think my portfolio at an all-time high in Q1 of this year. Mm. Since then, it's been dreadful. It's like dropped about 28%, I think it was, or 30%, close to 30%. But it's still up on, you know, this time last year, or this time 2020. So,
the panic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you zoom out a bit, you think, okay, don't worry about it too much. But because, you know, because from Q1 2020 to Q1 2021, it was cracking, unbelievable, you know. Mm. And then all of a sudden, it's because of that, and that just proves it, markets are cyclical. Because of that, it's all grinded lower. It'll go up again now in a bit. It'll take another bit of a breather.
As long as you select wisely, that's the key. You've got to be, you've got to be able to select reasonably wisely and prepared to sort of, to get, you know, carry on, even though you're going to get sort of like quite a lot of volatility and drawdowns. Yeah. But your principle is right. Where you have shares which are falling, the baby in the bathwater, but the underlying fundamentals of the business are getting stronger, that is the perfect ingredient to make a lot of money over the long or medium term. And I'm looking for that's the kind of stock I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, I'm just giving you five.
Yeah, but you've also given me that shirt for the last 50 minutes. So
this is a buy.
I'm
it's not a sell.
To buy that.
it's like stocks. You know, it's subjective a lot of the time. But I only ever literally wear these shirts when I go abroad, essentially, because it's, you know, it's sunny and flowery. But I thought it's Christmas time. I'll give Paul a treat. Cool. Anything else, fella?
No, that's brilliant. Look forward to it. And happy Christmas to everybody. Good luck with the investing in the new year, chaps. And
I thought you were going to say, good luck with exactly. Good luck for me as well. I thought you were going to say, good luck with that shirt then. Good luck with that shirt. That'll be on the sell side. Marvellous. Cheers, Paul. Speak next year.
Take care. Bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.